Hi, this is Dave Layton, and welcome to episode 3 of The Ride. Today is October 9th, 2014, and it has been exactly 1 year since the last time I attempted a podcast. I have thought about it damn near every day in the intervening months, and today I looked on my phone, saw that the actual last time was a year ago. And really, it made me feel like shit. I have tried to find creative outlets, and this was one that I thought would work for me, and had been meaning to just do a little blurb every month or so. And for whatever reason, I would come up with excuses and reasons, and you know, say, hey, well, I'll do it next month. And had always looked towards, I don't know, the 11th of the month, I think was a month in my mind that I would look towards and say, oh, well, I should probably, you know, podcast again. And it would sneak up on me. A month would go by, 2 months would go by. And the next thing I know, I am a year out of a promise that I kind of kept to myself. And it makes me feel like crap. It makes me feel real shitty. It makes me feel like I'm not being true to myself. It makes me feel like I'm kind of full of shit. I've thought about it almost every day. I have a little notebook where I keep a list of things to do. The way I break it down is I have a shopping list, just things I need to pick up at the store, and then there's things to do, and then creative things. So I have three little areas on my list. And I actually always have in the creative section podcast, and I have for a year now, actually over a year. I had been wanting to do it for a while, and it makes me feel really disappointed in myself. I know I have suffered a lack of motivation over the last year or so for a myriad of reasons and a myriad of excuses. And I don't know the solution to that. I keep trying to find ways to motivate myself to make myself feel better from a creative standpoint. And I really thought podcasting was going to do that for me. I thought it was going to let me exercise a little bit of the things that are inside of me that need to get out. And it, I don't know, disappointing in that regard and disappointed in myself for just... It doesn't feel like I wasted a year, but it feels like I have let opportunities go by where I certainly had time. It's not like I have been busy for 365 consecutive days and have not been able to find one single moment. I have enough spare time, usually after work, I get home at a decent hour, and if there's nothing going on with CJ or if there's nothing else going on with Robin, I usually have a couple, 3 hours before I get tired enough to go to bed, and have not taken advantage of the opportunity over the last year, and it's disappointing. Things that have happened in the last year have been fairly monumental. Event is that Robin graduated high school and is now in college. The last time that I podcasted, she was starting her senior year, had probably finished up the softball season at high school, was probably heading towards the playoffs, and her softball high school team ended up coming second in the entire state of Colorado, which was incredibly amazing. It was just wonderful. It was awesome. It was great. The only thing that would have been better had they won the state championship, but they ended up losing in the state championship game. And that was the last time. That was kind of what was going on. And now she's in college. She's through half of her first semester. She's going to Morehead State in Morehead, Kentucky. She changed majors. She was going to be a teacher. Was her original interest, and decided that she wanted to get into sports management, which is probably more up her alley. I always thought she'd be a great teacher. Maybe it's something that she can still end up doing, and Yeah. You know I changed majors a bunch of different times and went back to school twice, and you know, it took me forever to get my degree, and I'm hoping it doesn't take her forever to get her degree. But changing majors, it's not a big deal. She had actually changed before she had even arrived on campus. So for me, maybe I'll expand on the drama of her arriving on campus. Maybe what I'll do is I'll try to remember as best I can the last few months, maybe go month by month and see if I can remember what the hell happened. I know October was good for Robin. CJ, I think, was playing fall baseball. That was okay to me. It was a lot of money for not a lot of payoff. He played Slammers, which is the baseball organization, one of the baseball. Shit, there's freaking too many baseball organizations, and everybody knows better than the other one, and you know nobody wants to, get along with anybody else that runs a baseball organization. But we went to Slammers, and he had an okay fall. Like I said, I just thought it was a lot of money for not a lot of output. The big thing for CJ was that this time last year, he decided that he did not want to play hockey again. He decided that he wanted to focus on baseball. Being a freshman, he was in his beginning of his freshman year. Really wanted to make sure he was in a position to make the freshman baseball team at the high school, and he did. And in order for him to do that, he decided that he would not play hockey. I was a little disappointed, but it was his decision. I think it was a pretty responsible and pretty mature decision. And this time last year, he was not playing hockey. This year, he decided he wanted to play again because he missed it, and it's a bit of a challenge. And we'll see how it all works out. It's a big difference from the last time he played, and we'll see how that goes. So after softball finished up for Robin, probably the big thing for her was that she decided that having a boyfriend was an okay thing to do. And she decided she would date a boy named Zach, who had liked her since freshman year, and she had liked him since freshman year, and they had always stayed friends. And you know, I think early on he really wanted to date her, and she, very wisely decided that, she would focus her energies on school and on softball, which was ultimately what got her to the next level and got her to college. So she had kind of put that part of her high school experience on hold. And after the softball season ended her senior year, it worked out where they were interested enough in each other and decided to date. And from my perspective, he was a great kid. He was a great boyfriend. He was a great friend for her. And honestly, I was very, very proud of her and the responsible decision that she made, that it was kind of okay for her, in her senior year to have a full-on boyfriend. And she had a great senior year because of it. He's a basketball player, 6'8", big kid, and he's actually on a basketball scholarship, going to school himself. So it worked out for both of them, just really wonderful. They had this great, I called them the Brad and Angelina of the high school. they were the power couple on campus, really. He was the captain of the basketball team. She was the captain of the softball team. Pretty girl, handsome kid, athletes, good students. And they had a great, last three quarters of their senior year. They dated, they went to all the dances and events and, graduation and all that stuff was just wonderful. Got to know their parents, his parents, very, very well. And they ended up breaking up middle of the summer. Actually, it was probably a couple of weeks after graduation in May. And I think mostly his decision. I think she was pretty wrecked about it, and she doesn't choose to tell me the emotional side of things, and that hurts for me that she's not able to do that with me. But I think she was really torn up about breaking up with him when it did. I think she was looking forward to a fun summer before they both went off to college, and I think maybe he had a different mindset, and I don't really know. Nobody really ever told me. You know, maybe it's too hurtful for her to share that with me. But nonetheless, they had a great senior year together as boyfriend and girlfriend, and they have both gone their separate ways. And I think Robin kind of yearns for a boy like that again. Like I said, he was a great kid, great family he came from, wonderful parents, has a great sister that's CJ's age, and you know, I think she was kind of torn up. It was maybe her first true love, and shit, I can totally understand when your love goes bad. I don't mean to make light of it, but I really wish you would know how much I understand the pain of a relationship that ends maybe when you don't want it to end. So she embarked on this relationship her senior year. CJ struggled scholastically. I remember early on him not doing as well as I would have hoped him to do. And he ended up taking a couple of classes that maybe were a little over his head, and he's ending up repeating those two classes this year. Sadly, he's kind of off to that same sluggish start. November, fairly uneventful. Thanksgiving was probably the big deal for November, and if I remember correctly, they came over and we had some Thanksgiving together. Probably wasn't the way that I expected it, or wanted it, or hoped, or planned, and that is generally the case when it comes down to those kinds of decisions. I want more of their time, and it never works out. Maybe I'll share a little bit of my feelings and reasons why I think that happens. December was Christmas. Kids had a pretty good Christmas, I think. And then the exciting news for me was after Christmas, the kids moved in with me full-time for 3 months, and that was the best 3 months of the last 5 years of my life. I felt like I could really share the things that I wasn't able to share when they were living with their mom, and just be a part of the everyday life that I just really yearned for and missed and had been fighting for. My thought on the reason was that I think Deb had gotten just to a point where she needed a break, and I don't think she dealt with it as well as she should have, because in very typical fashion, she just made the decision, told the kids they were going to go live with their dad, and it came off to them as they were being punished. So for me, it was the best thing in the world, and for them, they felt like they were being punished, like they were being shipped off to their dads. They had to go live with their dad because mom didn't want him anymore. I remember CJ telling me, he felt that mom didn't love him anymore, and that was a pretty horrible thing for me to hear, because regardless of my issues with her, I know she's a good mom, and I know she loves those kids, and that's her focus, and it's my focus, and he felt kind of abandoned, and sadly, Robin had mentioned to me, when we were seeking counseling a few years ago, that she felt like I had abandoned her, and that was, a super, super, like, the worst thing that I've ever had to hear, because I don't feel like I abandoned her, but I can't control how she feels. And she honestly felt like I abandoned her. And to hear that from CJ, he was hurting. And it just made me sad. So those first 3 months of the year were great for me. I got to be, super, super involved like I had been, really wanting for a long time and had pushed for and finally got. And in March, the queen bee, of course, decided that, it was going to be the last chance for the two of the kids to have a great vacation together. So she took them on a cruise, which was great for her. And it was great that she could afford that. And it was awful for me. It made me feel worthless. It made me feel like, I can't provide for them the way that she provides for them and spends money on them the way I can't. And it just made me feel like a big steaming pile of dog shit. And I think in my heart of hearts, I think she knows that, and I think she revels in that, and I think she revels in taking that opportunity anytime she can, making me feel, you know, less about myself as it pertains to the kids. So after they went on their cruise for a week, they moved back with her, and for the most part, stayed with her on a full-time basis, and through the summer, through baseball and softball, I spent a lot of time with CJ. I didn't coach CJ's baseball this year, but spent some time traveling with him, as is kind of the case. And it always was the case, even before the divorce, that it was just the way we divided and conquered. And, you know, I really, really fought to try to get a lot of time with Robin afterwards, and it didn't happen the way that I wanted to, and it never happens the way I wanted to. Knowing that she was going to go to college, knowing that she was going to be out the door, knowing that there weren't going to be many opportunities for us to have time together as, you know, father and daughter, I pushed for that a lot, and I know it was not anything that she particularly wanted. She, you know, tolerated it as much as she could and came over as much as she felt like, and it just was never enough for me. You know, not having a kid there all the time is the worst feeling. It's the worst feeling for me. So as the summer progressed and, you know, knowing that time was running out, I would push and push and maybe push too hard, and that's just, I don't know how else to not accomplish things when I want to accomplish things. I try not to, you know, give up. And, you know, we did get times together and alone and did some things. And, you know, she came over the last couple of nights before she went to school. And her going to school was a heartbreaking experience for me. CJ's summer was okay. He played on a travel baseball team for an organization called 5280, which was another new startup organization, and there was a lot of growing involved in being a part of an organization that's new. And for the most part, it was a good experience for CJ. He got to play as much as he could have played on a team that was constructed the way that it was constructed. And he played at a higher level than I think he might have been ready for, but that was okay. Speaking of baseball, he did play freshman baseball for the high school team, and really what happens for high school baseball is they start what they call winter workouts, and that's 2.5 months of what nobody would really admit as tryouts. That's where they're able to identify the kids that are players and their strengths and their weaknesses and who they really want on the team. And then they run, you know, 2.5 days of tryouts in February. So CJ made the freshman team. He pitched a little. He did not play as much as I thought he should have. But I bit my tongue a lot. I needed to try to let him find his own way, which is, it's important for a kid that age to, you know, have his dad step back, who's really always coached him, and, you know, let him try to find his own way on a team. And he floundered quite a bit. But as is usually the case when I wasn't a coach involved on a team that he was at, it took him a long time to figure out his strengths. And towards the end of the season, he ended up playing, you know, more than he did early in the season. But in the end, I think the baseball experience wasn't a great one. And high school baseball is going to be a challenge. You know, there are different intricacies involved. There are different, you know, political aspects of things. And the worst part of it for me was the email that I got from the team mom introducing herself to everybody. And it ended up being Deb, and I felt great. I get to get more emails from somebody I don't want to get one email from. Now I get to hear her, espouse the, the things that a teen mom espouses and organizes the things that a teen mom espouses. It was not fun. I didn't like it at all. So my way to volunteer and be a part of things was to go up and run the scoreboard. So I think I'll probably do that for the next 3 years. So that was high school baseball, not great. Summer baseball for CJ was okay. He did get a decent amount to play at a little bit higher level. He played 16 and under, and he was still 14. And he was playing against a lot of bigger kids and did okay. Hitting, he struggled and ended up the summer and decided to not play fall ball. Robin's summer was great. I thought, as summers go, the success of the team wasn't as high as it has been in years gone by. They had a lot of new girls on the team, but it was it wasn't the what's the word I'm looking for, the farewell tour necessarily, but there was a certain amount of that. There were 8 seniors on the competitive team that were that was going to be their last competitive season. They're all all 8 of them had found colleges to go play college softball at, and there was a great deal of sadness when that ended for Robin. That was a huge part of her life for the last 5 years, was the Angels softball team, and she really found her way, I think, as an athlete and as a leader on an athletic team, and she was a great leader for that team. The interesting thing, towards the end of the year, she hurt her thumb, and we thought it was just kind of a strained muscle or a pulled ligament or something along those lines. And as is usual, Deb will run the kids to the doctors anytime she feels it drives me nuts. I don't agree with her running the kids to the doctors as much as she does, but in this time, I was 100% wrong. She took Robin to the doctor, and the doctor put her in a cast for the last month of the summer because he thought she had a pulled muscle. They didn't do an MRI, and the week before she went to college, got the cast off, put it in a splint, and when she got to college, they were doing their baseline testing, and she was meeting with the trainers, and they saw the splint and said, "What's up with that?" They did some more testing on the thumb and said, "I think you have a pulled ligament here," and had an MRI done on her. And it turns out she tore the ligament off of her thumb, and she ended up having to have surgery. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that here in a bit. But the end of the summer was a difficult time for me. I had looked towards driving Robin out to school and being part of that portion of her life. And I feel like I was robbed of that opportunity. The reason being, I started to try to make plans. The original plan was that we would drive out. We would take 2 cars. Deb would take her car. I would take my car. We'd load them up with all the stuff that she needs for college and drop our daughter off at college. That changed as the schedule became apparent for CJ that he would miss the first week of high school. And we felt that it was probably in his best interest to not miss school. So the thought was, well, that CJ would not come with us, but that we would still drive out. So as that plan kind of evolved, I needed to make arrangements as to where to stay on the drive out and on the drive back. And I thought I would stay with my nephew Jimmy in St. Louis, and made that call. The offer was, to stay for whenever I was driving through, and it was great. And Jimmy, being the great kid that he is, extended the opportunity to Robin and to Deb as well. And I made that clear to Deb, and being the way that she is, she chose to I think get freaked out and get butt hurt and decided that she needed to change the plans since Robin since CJ was not gonna drive out with us. We didn't need a car. It was a little bit more cost effective for her to fly her and Robin out. And that changed the plans for me greatly, because I wasn't in a position where I could necessarily afford to buy a plane ticket on a two-week notice. So I still decided that I would drive out and I would load things up in my car and drive them out and still be a part of that experience dropping my daughter off to college. At that point, we didn't know that she was going to need surgery on her thumb. So I thought that I would drive out and still be a part of that. As it came closer, I was still a little bit up in the air as to whether I could afford to fly, and I couldn't afford to fly. So less than a week away, I told Robin that I would still drive out. And I think she made the decision on her own, but I think that there was input, not necessarily as it was specifically related to me, but as to the plan on how things were going to go in the coming weeks. And she told me that she thought it would be better if I were to not be a part of dropping her off at college and instead come out for her fall scrimmages, because then she would have more time to spend with me. That was a hard, awful thing to hear, that something that I was looking towards and planning towards and looking, ever so much to be a part of, that it wasn't something that was going to happen. Very shortly after that, Deb said the same thing to me. So I have no other thought in my mind other than to think that somehow there was communications going on between the two of them. And said, it's probably better off if Dad doesn't come. So that was really, really heartbreaking, and it was really hard, and I cried a lot, and I felt so left out and so not wanted by that whole experience. But the caveat was that I would go out for the fall scrimmages for my daughter's first softball games that she was going to be a part of. And ultimately that ended up shitting in my face too, because of the surgery. Robin got out to school and they determined that, she saw a doctor, did an MRI. She needed to have a surgery. Now this is the me bitching part. Deb makes all those decisions on her own and absolutely refuses to tell me anything, which I have a huge problem with. And I scrambled and put myself into just ridiculous debt to find out what was going on with this surgery. A couple of weeks before the surgery was scheduled, she ran CJ to the emergency room, and I'm getting bills now for this. Of course, she didn't tell me what precipitated that he had this baseball lesson. I know I'm getting a little scatterbrained here, but this shit just pisses me off, and I got to get it off my chest. She had signed him up for a baseball workout, didn't tell me about it. He gets to the workout. He passes out. She calls an ambulance. Guess, my insurance covers the kids. But she tells me, I'm on the way to the emergency room with CJ. And he passed out. I'm like, great. You'll tell me that, he's in the emergency room, but you won't tell me that you signed him up for baseball workout. So I was pissed. There were a lot of things going on. She let him take some time off from school, which I didn't agree with. She does a lot of things that I don't agree with. And I finally let her know my opinion on a lot of situations. It really boiled to a head in very blunt terms. I was pissed. I swore at her a lot. I felt great that I swore at her a lot. I told her that I thought it was wrong that she doesn't tell me things about the kids, and she tells me that it's their job to tell me what's going on in their life, and I completely 100% disagree with that. And all this time, I was swearing at her in the emergency room in the hospital. Nobody else was around. CJ had gone to get testing done, and nurses were gone, and the door was closed. And the end result was that she just shut down, which, you know, I've always maintained through this divorce, I do not have any interest in what goes on in her life. I have an interest in what goes on with my kids, and that affects her life. I don't want to be on a fucking bowling team with her, but I need to have some line of communication. After that tirade I had on her, and honestly, I will defend myself, she deserved being yelled at. She was being a fucking bitch, and she needed for me to yell at her, and she needed me to know, to let her know what was on my mind. But the end result was that she shut down, and she's being a fucking two-year-old now, and she is giving me the silent treatment. She won't return texts and emails as they pertain to the kid. I don't have any interest in asking her about her day. I want to know what's going on with the kids, and she controls that information and uses that against me, which is a giant source of aggravation. It's held like it's a state secret, and I have to figure out how to find it out, but I don't know how to find it out because nobody will tell me. So because of that, I get no information. I get no information about a surgery. I get to pay for the surgery, but she won't tell me where it's scheduled, when it's scheduled, what hotel her and Robin are staying at in Cincinnati, so I can be there for my daughter who is going under the knife, who is going under anesthesia, who is going to get surgery, I'm not going to not be there for this one. I'm not going to be told, well, it's okay. I'm tired of being told that it's okay and then finding out it's really not okay because, you know, they have that against me now. so I made a huge issue of it and put myself behind the eight ball financially to be there. And I wouldn't not have been there. But it's just, it was stressful trying to find things out. Here's a perfect example. I had to, excuse me, I found out that the surgery was being done at a orthopedic group, and then this group has five offices in the Cincinnati area. So I called one of the main offices and asked, I said, I need to know what's going on with the scheduling for surgery for my daughter. Turns out I wasn't on the HIPAA form, so they could not legally give me information about my daughter, who's 18 now, because mom didn't put me on the HIPAA form. So I get to be the responsible party for the insurance, but I don't get to know anything about it. So after a great deal of coaxing and a great deal of patient conversation with the person and some people in the practice. Excuse me, had to take a sip of water there, getting a little dry. I was able to find out a lot of things, and it just created a great deal of aggravation that I was not given information. I had to dig for information that, in my opinion, if Deb's going to make decisions that involve the kids, she should tell me. I'm a moron and I'm an idiot, and the kids are the ones that are supposed to tell me because it relates to them. So anyway, enough said on that part. So I was there for the surgery, and I was able to be a part of that. But because of that, Robin wasn't able to play in the fall scrimmages as planned. So it created just an awkward weekend. I went back 2 weeks after that for the scrimmages after the surgery. We took her back down to school in Kentucky, left, came back again 2 weeks later. and got to sit around and ultimately be ignored and be left out of a lot of things and be not given information about a lot of things as they pertain to my daughter, least of which was that, you know, my plan was to go back on Monday on a flight. And Deb scheduled a visit to the doctor in Cincinnati to get the brace adjusted. And she didn't tell me that. I have every intent of being involved around the things that I was there for, to be there for my daughter, but they were going to leave me in Kentucky. And I don't think Robin had any clue that Deb was just not interested in telling me anything. And she wouldn't tell Robin things. So, you know, the new way of doing it is don't tell Robin anything, and then, you know, he can't find out and he can't be a part of it. So I had to, again, try to figure out where the hell they were staying, where the hell the doctor's appointment was, because it was at a different location than it was the previous time, and ended up, you know, able to be there for the visit back to the doctor 2 weeks after the surgery. So at this point, the greatest frustration in my life is the fact that I'm being given the silent treatment by a very immature person who will take great lengths to keep me in the dark about my kids. And it's frustrating, it's aggravating, it's hurtful, it's childish, it's immature, and I don't deal with that well, and I don't know how to deal with that well. So I am very frustrated with that dynamic. I could call Deb a lot of names, and maybe I will, but I called her a lot of names to her face. And like I said earlier, I think that kind of blew up and wasn't productive for me to get information about my kids, because now she tells me less than she used to, which was hardly anything. So in the interim, CJ has decided that he wanted to play hockey again. And so he's playing hockey again, and I'm very excited about that. He asked if I could be part of the coaching experience, because he enjoys that. It's a time for he and I to get together. He and I have a different relationship than Robin and I do. And just like Deb and Robin have a different relationship, CJ and I have a different relationship. So he started playing hockey again a couple weeks ago, and you know, the team that he's on is filled with giant man boys that are, you know, 16, 17 years old and driving and, you know, bigger than me and heavier than me. And I am pretty fearful that he's going to get roughed up quite a bit playing hockey this year. He's grown quite a bit, but these kids are just big kids. And I'm not worried that he's going to get hurt, but I'm concerned he's going to get knocked around. He's going to get knocked on his ass quite a bit. So he did not play fall baseball. And is again struggling with two of the same classes that he struggled with last year. Went to parent-teacher conferences last night and was just not too enthused with what I had to hear. With Robin, the good news is that her thumb is healing incredibly well. She's 5 weeks out now. She's able to move the thumb to her tolerance. When I was there 3 weeks ago, I saw the scar, the incision. It's healing. There's no infections. So she is on the mend exceptionally well, and she's actually on fall break right now. She went to Ohio with a couple of her teammates. I think she's spending the night the next couple of days at a teammate's house, which is right up her alley. She does well in situations like that. She enjoys situations like that. And I didn't know about it until I saw something on Twitter, and ended up reaching out to her and ended up finding out that, yeah, she's on her way from Kentucky to Ohio, which was interesting to find out. But, you know, she was able to share that with me, and it was good to hear. don't know where in Ohio she is, but she's there for a couple of days and having a good spring break. I mean, fall break. CJ, on the other hand, has fall break coming up next week. He pretty much had a break all week this week because the decision was made, again, without me being a part of it or even knowing anything about it until Monday, that he was volunteering for outdoor education again, which is he goes and is kind of like a counselor to fifth grade kids that do this outdoor education. And, you know, it's an approved, you know, county school function. And what they do is they get volunteer hours for it because, you know, high school kids in this county need a certain amount of volunteer hours in order to graduate from high school. So they get volunteer hours, but they miss school, they miss classes, so he gets behind. And he's already behind because he's the manager of the varsity softball team now that Robin's gone. So he missed 3 days of class this week. And he did this outdoor education, which was great. You know, it's a good experience. But if it was my decision, I wouldn't have let him go. But I did not get to make that decision because he was with Deb. And again, Deb didn't even include me in that decision. So as it stands right now, I am pushing really hard to try to get CJ to live with me at least for a month. He's a little resistant to that. But I think I need to try to be more impactful as far as school is concerned, and I can't do that if he's not here with me. I don't know the dynamic that goes on with homework with her, but I just know that the end result is that he misses a lot of work and he doesn't make it up and his grades suffer because of that. And I am pushing really hard to try to get that to happen, but I'm not holding out a lot of hope. So as it stands right now, Robin's on fall break. CJ just got back today. Fall break starts tomorrow. The good news for the fall break thing is that maybe he will come over for the next week, and we'll see how that goes. That's what I'm hoping for. So that kind of catches up on the last year. That's 40 minutes into 12 months of me living. The big news for me lately is that you know, through all the things that have transpired in the last, you know, few years, you know, life has gotten more expensive for me. I haven't been able to work in a pizza place part-time because of the carpal tunnel syndrome that I have. So I had been over the last couple of years trying to get back into radio and sending out emails and air checks and resumes. And interestingly enough, was able to get an offer to go work for Westwood One Radio Networks, which is the company that bought out Dial Global. Dial Global is the company that bought out Jones Radio Networks. I used to work for Jones Radio Networks. Jones Radio Networks was the last radio job I had, and when they got bought out by Dial Global, my position was consolidated, and it has been, oh gosh, what did I say, 6 years maybe since I've worked in radio. And so I sent out an email to a guy at a format at the network. He didn't have anything, but he forwarded it to somebody else who did. Went in for an interview, talked with a gal, Sherry Marquardt, who's a program director for the AC, the Adult Contemporary format, and she offered me a gig. Now, the sucky part is that I guess Westwood One is owned by Cumulus Broadcasting, I think she said. I think it was Cumulus. And it's a bit of a struggle to get authorization and signatures up the corporate ladder when you hire somebody. So it's been 3 weeks since she said, yes, I want to hire you. And I haven't started yet. So I'm a little worried that maybe something's going on that I don't know about. It's a little nerve-wracking. I need to start working more than I'm working right now. I need the extra income. I need to start working, and it's not happening. I've emailed her a couple of times and, kind of jokingly said, hey, what's going on? Did the background search turn up, some skeletons in my closet? And, she said, no, just waiting for some corporate approval. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I really want to start working for the network. I really want to start getting back in radio. It'll be a part-time weekend thing. I think there's 160-plus affiliates. I think a lot of them stream. So being able to get back into radio is a very exciting prospect for me. I'm really, really looking forward to it. And like I said, I hope it ends up working the way that I'm looking forward to it to working. So it'll be, big yawn. It'll be a part-time thing. I'll probably do one, sort of live shift, as it were, and then one voice track shift. So maybe somewhere between, 5 to 10 hours a week, but it'll be enough to help, supplement the income that I need supplemented. The day job is going okay. There's a lot of changes there. There's some new systems that are coming into place, some new, just some new systems coming down the line. So there's a lot of work involved in that. I'm able to work, get a little bit of overtime in every week, put some hours in where, not everybody in the building is allowed to. I apologize for yawning. Part of that working thing is that I'm up at about 5:30 in the morning and out the door, anywhere between an hour, hour and a half later, and usually not back till five, and working pretty hard, and mentally I'm drained when I come home from work. So right now it's about 10 o'clock at night, and I have been up since 5:30, and it's pretty much the way it goes every day, and not looking for a big boo-hoo, sorry for Dave party, but it's just how it is. So that's why the yawns keep happening, and I do apologize for that, and I feel one coming on. Son of a bitch, coming on again. So the getting back into radio thing is looking good. The day job is steady and will always be there, and hopefully it can morph into something down the road where there's more responsibility. I can maybe transition into a different position, maybe make a little bit more money, make more money than I'm making right now, so I don't have to work two jobs. That would be kind of nice. So maybe through this new systems upgrade and change, maybe I'll give them an opportunity. Here's the thing. We had a seminar the other day, and I got the very strong impression from people within the office and people within the corporate office that because I've been there so long and because I kind of have ways that I like to do things, shit, everybody has ways they like to do things. I have a reputation as being kind of stuck in my own ways and very, dead set against change, which couldn't be any further from the truth. Change for change is a problem for me. But if change is made for the better, I'm completely okay with it. But through the seminar, it was a leadership seminar, managing change, and looking at the position that I have within the branch that I have, people think, I get the strong impression that there are people that think that I am going to be against this change. This is a company-wide, system-wide, parent company-wide change. I'm not stupid enough to think that I'm going to fight it, and I'm going to show them, and I'm not going to be on board with this, and fuck them. No, I am full on board with this. So I did get a little motivated through the course of this management seminar to really just shove it up a lot of people's ass and show them that I am going to kick this thing in fucking high gear and really just show them that they're fucking wrong about me. They couldn't be any more wrong about me if they tried. They think they know, they have opinions about what I am about. And so I was able to find some motivation in a job that's not a hard job. It's not an awful job, but it's not a job where I find that kind of motivation a lot. You know, I am motivated to get projects done. I'm very task oriented at work because there's a lot of tasks for me to get done. And throughout the course of a day, I don't get every task done that comes across my desk, and that's kind of frustrating. And I struggle with that conceptually, that I can't get everything done that needs to get done within the course of a day, because it does snowball. So, you know, with that as part of the day-to-day grind that I'm in with my job, I don't find that internal motivation, but this is the perfect opportunity, and this is the perfect venue for me to find that motivation. I think I have found that motivation, to really prove a lot of people wrong and really kick this new process's ass and just make it sing and show them that, fuck, hey, this is nothing. Dave Layton has got this. And so with that said, I have found the motivation. The reason for the podcast, this particular podcast, and maybe, you know, maybe part of the problem for me is that I've been able to cope a little bit better over the last year with the death of my best friend Tim and my son's godfather Tim. It's not that it's easy, but I've been able to cope better with that loss. And I haven't podcasted. This podcast was originated as a way to maybe help me cope with the loss of my friend Tim. I was able to see things throughout the course of the year that made me smile about Tim. And you know, one of them was that CJ and I played hockey together. I skated over the summer with a group of guys that I've skated off and on with. It's basically old guy hockey. Last couple of weeks of this session that we schedule, the guy that organizes it invited us to bring kids out that were old enough and capable enough to play, and that's where CJ got the bug to play hockey again. So CJ skated with me, and he skated with me in Tim's hockey jersey, Tim's number 8 from the old roller hockey days. I was 77. I've had these jerseys. I've had my jersey forever since the old roller hockey team. And after Tim died, Wendy gave me a lot of Tim's old hockey equipment, and in that was that team's jersey. So I had kind of the matching set. I had the 8, which was Tim's. I had the 77, which was mine. So when CJ and I went to go play hockey, I threw the 8 in there, and I smiled. I got to see, you know, the past, and I got to see the present and the future with my son, kind of all wrapped up in the number 8 on the back of my son's jersey, which I saw the back of a lot when Tim and I played together. I saw the number 8. You know, I was in his rearview mirror. You know, he was a forward, I was a defenseman. So I saw that number 8 a lot. And it did my heart good to see my son in that hockey jersey. I can't call it a sweater because it's not really a legit, you know, grown-up, you know, hockey boy jersey. Sweater. So just to see that, yeah, it did my heart good. And there were little moments like that. My friend Nancy was looking to borrow some hockey gear for a presentation that she had at work. And, you know, she knows Tim, and she knew Tim was there at a couple of parties at Tim's house. And, you know, a couple of Rockies games, and we ran into them a lot when we had Boston things going on. And she was, you know, her and Matt, her husband Matt, were there at, you know, the ceremonies for Tim. And so she called and was looking for some hockey equipment for this presentation that she needed for her work. And I let her have some of Tim's old hockey equipment for that. And it was great. And she borrowed it, and it was a great success. And that brought, you know, a smile to my face and some warmth in my heart as it pertains to Tim. And that I think is the story that I have to wrap up this 1 year anniversary of my last podcast episode of The Ride. So I wanted to use the podcast as a way to share some stories about Tim and help me, you know, kind of, you know, provide my own therapy. And, you know, seeing Tim live on through some old hockey equipment, it's really kind of, you know, not much, but for me, it was a lot, and helped me move in a more, you know, positive direction as it pertains to Tim. You know, his widow, Wendy, moved back to Massachusetts, and I've missed her a lot. I've missed that opportunity. She needed that opportunity to go be around her family, and you know, I don't begrudge her one single bit for moving back to where her family is and where Tim's family is. You know, she was kind of on an island out here, so she moved back, and it was a good thing for her. But I miss her, you know, and I miss her just that she was that piece that was left for my friend Tim. We still stay in touch. We text, we Facebook. You know, I think she's doing well. You know, I think she's found a guy friend, a boyfriend, if you will, and I think that's good for her. I think she needs to heal more than anybody else needs to heal, as far as Tim's death is concerned. So, you know, I'm happy that she's able to you know, piece together a new existence, teeny little morsel by teeny little morsel, you know, in the year or so it's been since I've last podcast, she's made some big strides in her life and some big changes in her life. And doesn't mean I can't miss her. I haven't seen her. She came out in, I want to say, the winter to do some skiing, and I wasn't able to meet up with her. I was really kind of bummed out that I wasn't able to see her. But, you know, the technology that exists in these times enables people to keep in touch. And we were able to text a lot and Facebook a lot and tweet a lot. She owns a business now. She owns a food truck. And I can't wish her enough luck, and I can't hope good things enough for her with that and with the things that she's doing in Massachusetts. And maybe I'll head out there sometime soon. Maybe I'll hop in the car and go for a road trip. But, you know, the story for me that will end for Tim, I guess, is maybe when he blew his knee out. Tim blew his knee out in the most inane contact I think I had ever seen. Were we wearing those jerseys? I think we were wearing, that was the team that had the jerseys that CJ and I wore recently. God, I forget the name of the team. Anyway, Tim was in the defensive zone. He was a forward, he's a winger. Was in the defensive zone, trying to clear the puck out, get into the neutral zone. The puck, I don't remember if it was him or not that cleared the puck, but he transitioned, was coming out of the defensive zone, and as he transitioned to come out of the defensive zone, he made real slight knee-to-knee contact with a guy on the other team. As he was coming to the bench, you could see him kind of, you know, wince in pain a little bit. A defenseman was coming off, so I hopped on the ice as Tim was hopping on the ice and kind of looked around and looked back and saw he was kind of in a little pain. And when I got back onto the bench, we ended up sitting close to each other after my shift. And he said, I smacked that guy's knee. And, you know, it was a little knee-on-knee thing. It was very incidental. And he seemed to be okay. And I guess he went to the doctor. They thought it was a torn meniscus. And that was my introduction into the part of the knee called the meniscus. And used to tease him about it a little bit. And he kind of toughed it out for a while and worked off the assumption that it was a torn meniscus. And maybe a month or so later, found out that it was torn and had to have it repaired. And was gimpy for a while. And I just blew my mind that this really slight knee-to-knee contact caused that much damage in Tim's knee, who, you know, as a guy, was a big guy, was, you know, 6'3", 6'4", you know, 220, 225 maybe, depending on, you know, how fat of an ass he had. but that this guy that I always thought was 10 feet tall and bulletproof was really just kind of grazed and blew his knee out in reality. So that's my memory of Tim, and that's my story of Tim. And with that, I will look at the clock on the wall and see that I am coming up on a good hour of having podcast, and I should not wait another year to do this again. And I can't tell you how disappointed I was, but I can't tell you how good I feel now, an hour after just chatting to an empty room, to get some things off my chest that probably haven't had an opportunity to get off my chest in a year. So thanks for listening to The Ride. This is Dave Layton. Hope to talk to you again sometime soon. Take care.